Welcome to my tour, Charlottengrad and the Sunken Village of Lietzow. My name is Agnes von Witzleben, psychogeographic archivist, cosmopolitan globalist, opportunistic archivist, and host of the Berlin Footnote.
I've been living in Berlin for 23 years, most of them right here in Charlottenburg.
Transmission 0.5 is just a sample of the upcoming GPS-based walking tour and podcast, available in January of 2026.
Keep an eye out for dog shit, cars, bikes, and those e-scooters that appear out of nowhere. Our tour begins at Charlottenburg's S-Bahn station and moves through the neighborhood tied to Nabokov's A Guide to Berlin, written here nearly a century ago. Along the way, we'll look at traces of the Russian emigre community, the radical social experiments of Kommune Eins, and landmarks like the Click Kino, micro museums, music train records, Persian bookshops, and the antique dealers of Suarezstrasse. The walk ends with a stroll around the Lietzensee, where local folklore speaks of a sunken village beneath the water, and where, for a time, mystic Aleister Crowley used Charlottenburg as his base of operations. A quick disclaimer. When we wade into the whole mystics and spirits and nymphs thing, don't expect 100% historical accuracy. We're mixing documented history with local gossip and half-remembered myths and a bit of creative license. This is a story walk, not an exam, so don't fact-check the ghosts. We start our tour in a very precarious place. On the narrow median beneath the S-Bahn bridge, where Lewisham-Strasse turns into Kaiser-Friedrich-Strasse, just south of Stuttgarter Platz. Look at the concrete barrier between the north and southbound lanes. Look closely. That, improbably, is an enigmatic concrete banana, securely mounted, unlabeled without any obvious purpose, inexplicable, and oddly permanent. To your right stands the Russian store at the entrance to the station. You'll spot it by the Cyrillic signage. It's the neighborhood's only 24-hour grocery. The story of why this particular store is allowed to stay open at night, and God forbid also on Sundays, has to do with the original contract the owner signed with the S-Bahn, which was operated by the GDR. The shelves are stacked with tins of caviar, jars of pickled mushrooms, slabs of cured herring, Georgian wines, and frozen pelmeni. At the adjoining cafe, you might find taxi drivers sipping black tea from glass tumblers or students still nursing a beer from before dawn. If you were to decide to jaywalk instead of crossing at the light, you'll probably feel the silent judgment of the modern Charlottenburger, an archetype both maligned and misunderstood. We'll meet more of them as we go. For now, make your way to the station entrance, but linger a minute. You can sit in front of Café Russia or step inside the grocery store and browse. Just avoid walking too far in the green patches on either sides of the station. That's where things tend to get a bit sketchy, and where you'll find whatever crawled out from under the underbelly of Charlottenburg. Be advised. Here we are at Stuttgarter Platz in front of the Charlottenburg S-Bahn station. Let's imagine this place around 100 years ago, in the winter of 1925. Vladimir Nabokov, who back then went by the name V. Surin, is sitting in a cafe nearby, waiting to visit his publisher. He just walked from his apartment a kilometer south of here in Wilmersdorf. Nabokov himself was never a huge fan of Berlin. He would later call Berlin kind of a prison sentence. Despite that, he lived here from 1922 to 1937, after his father was shot and killed here during an emigre political meeting gone wrong. The assassin's bullet wasn't even meant for him. He stepped in to protect another man and paid with his life. The younger Nabokov stayed to look after his widowed mother, to translate, to teach tennis, and to write through his grief. He even worked as an extra in films that were being shot here. Okay, let me show you where we're going. With your back to the Russian grocer, look across the road, slightly left. Do you see the corner building with Albert sign above it? We're going to cross the street here at the crosswalk, then head towards that sign. Once you get there, turn right and walk along the sidewalk. Got it? Great. Let's head over there. Nabokov writes in his essay, "The horse-drawn tram has vanished, and so will the trolley, and some eccentric Berlin writer of the 21st century, wishing to portray our time, will compile a description of Berlin streets of bygone days. Everything, every trifle, will be valuable and significant. The conductor's purse, the advertisement over the window, that peculiar jolting motion which our great-grandchildren will perhaps imagine. Everything will be ennobled and justified by its age. I think that here lies the sense of literary creation, to portray ordinary objects as they will be reflected in the kindly mirrors of future times, to find in the objects around us the fragrant tenderness that only posterity will discern and appreciate in the far-off times when every trifle of our plain everyday life will become exquisite and festive in its own right. The times when a man who might put on the most ordinary jacket of today will be dressed up for an elegant masquerade. 100 years later, we're standing at Stuttgarter Platz, another place that's easy to overlook. Remember, turn right when you reach the Albert sign. Let's walk up Kaiser Friedrichstrasse towards the pub Zum Hecht, in English, to the pike, like the fish. You'll pass Hotel Stuttgarter Eck on your left. The curb in front is often crowded with men loading into white vans, a kind of informal labor market known in Berlin as an Arbeiterstrich. Every morning they gather here waiting for short-term construction work or day jobs. The area has a long reputation for being rough around the edges. Tagesspiegel once called it Berlin's wichtigste Handelplatz für harte Drogen, Berlin's main marketplace for hard drugs. But go on. Step inside Zum Hecht if you like. The place is dark and smoky, and supposedly the owners never got a key made due to it never closing. Toward the back and to the right, you'll find a small buffet where free pickles and the occasional Häppchen or sandwiches are. Grab one, and let me read you something Nabokov once wrote. A memory of a Berlin pub very much like this one. "That's a very poor guide," my usual drinking companion says glumly. "Who cares about how you took a streetcar and went to Berlin Zoo?" The pub in which he and I are sitting is divided into two parts, one large, the other somewhat smaller. A billiard table occupies the center of the former. There are a few tables in the corners, and bottles stand on shelves behind the bar. There, under the mirror, the child still sits alone, but he is now looking our way. From where he can see the inside of the tavern, the green island of the billiard table, the ivory ball he is forbidden to touch, and perhaps the free pickle. Whatever happens to him in life, he will always remember the picture he saw every day of his childhood from the little room where he was fed his soup. He will remember the billiard table and the coatless evening visitor who used to draw back his sharp white elbow and hit the ball with his cue. The blue-gray cigar smoke and the din of voices and my empty right sleeve and scarred face, and his father behind the bar, filling a mug for me from the tap. "I can't understand what you see down there," says my friend, turning back toward me. What indeed? How can I demonstrate to him I have glimpsed somebody's future recollection? Now step back outside and let your eyes adjust to the daylight. Head back towards the station, hang a right, continue west along Stuttgarter Platz. By the time we finish, you'll be standing in the corner of Windscheid and Stutti, the next chapter of our walk. Before you turn, there's a small bronze plaque that marks the birthplace of Kommune 1, West Berlin's first political commune. They were part of a much larger West German rebellion against their parents' silence and the unresolved legacy of Nazism. If it were to serve the pursuit of truth. That sentence became a rallying cry for every prankster with a political conscience. Their ringleader was Dieter Kunzelmann, a mischievous visionary who'd spent the early 60s in Munich with a group of artists called Spur. That circle had recently joined Guy Debord and the Situationists International, a network of European radicals who believed that modern life had turned into a spectacle. A giant theater where we no longer live directly, but merely watch ourselves being sold. The Situationists wanted to sabotage that spectacle. They wandered cities on aimless drifts they called dérives, letting mood and chance replace reason. They took advertisements, posters, and comic strips and twisted their meaning. a tactic called
détournement.
It wasn't just art, it was insurgent play, an attempt to reclaim imagination from commerce. When Kunzelmann moved to Berlin in 1967, he brought that spirit to Kommune Eins. In a flat right here at Stuttgarter Platz with Fritz Teufel, Rainer Langhans, and later model activist Uschi Obermeier, K1 turned daily life into performance, mock press conferences, naked manifestos, and one notorious stunt, the so-called pudding attentat, an attempted attack on US Vice President Humphrey, with bags of pudding and flour. Their antics mixed absurdism with genuine politics, but hindsight hasn't been kind. Kunzelmann himself slid further into extremism, joining the militant Tupamaros West Berlin, serving prison time, then re-emerging in the 80s as a provocateur in the city's parliament for the early Green Movement. He died in 2018, a self-made villain of post-war Berlin. Keep walking west now towards Windscheidstrasse. On your right, you'll pass Happy-Go-Lucky Hostel. For years, its facade exploded with color, a vast, joyful mural by the Irish artist Dom Suba, a kind of psychedelic grin welcoming travelers. In 2022, the city ordered it removed for violating heritage rules. The wall is bare again. Go ahead and cross Windscheidstrasse and turn right. The next story will trigger in front of the Click Kino. Unfortunately, that's all there is for now. The rest can be expected the beginning of next year. Some stories stay buried. Others wait for footsteps. When the lake answers back, you'll know the walk has begun. Something big is afoot. The next transmission is scheduled for the beginning of 2026.